120 Days of Sodom by the Marquis de Sade, narrated by Paul Sparrow. Introduction. The extensive wars wherewith Louis XIV was burdened during his reign, while draining the state's treasury and exhausting the substance of the people, nonetheless contained the secret that led to the prosperity of a swarm of those bloodsuckers who are always on the watch for public calamities, which, instead of appeasing, they promote or invent so as precisely to be able to profit from them the more advantageously. The end of this so very sublime reign was perhaps one of the periods in the history of the French Empire when one saw the emergence of the greatest number of these mysterious fortunes, whose origins are as obscure as the lust and debauchery that accompany them. It was toward the close of this period, and not long before the regent sought, by means of the famous tribunal which goes under the name of the Chambre de Justice, to flush this multitude of traffickers, that four of them conceived the idea for the singular revels whereof we are going to give an account. One must not suppose that it was exclusively the low-born and vulgar sort which did this swindling. Gentlemen of the highest note led the pack. The Duc de Blangis and his brother, the Bishop of Aix, each of whom had thuswise amassed immense fortunes, are in themselves solid proof that, like the others, the nobility neglected no opportunities to take this road to wealth. These two illustrious figures, through their pleasures and business closely associated with the celebrated Dorset and the Président de Courval, were the first to hit upon the debauch we propose to chronicle, and having communicated the scheme to their two friends, all four agreed to assume the major roles in these unusual orgies. For above 6 years, these four libertines, kindred through their wealth and tastes, had thought to strengthen their ties by means of alliances, in which debauchery had by far a heavier part than any of the other motives that ordinarily serve as a basis for such bonds. What they arranged was as follows. The Duc de Blangis, thrice a widower and sire of two daughters one wife had given him, having noticed that the Président de Courval appeared interested in marrying the elder of these girls, despite the familiarities he knew perfectly well her father had indulged in with her, the Duke, I say, suddenly conceived the idea of a triple alliance. "You want Julie for your wife," said he to Courval. "I give her to you unhesitatingly, and put but one condition to the match, that you'll not be jealous when, although your wife, she continues to show me the same complaisance she always has in the past. What is more, I'd have you lend your voice to mine in persuading our good Dorset to give me his daughter Constance, for whom, I confess, I have developed roughly the same feelings you have formed for Julie." "But," said Courval, "you are surely aware that Dorset, just as libertine as you—" "I know all that's to be known," the Duke rejoined. "In this age, and with our manner of thinking, is one halted by such things? Do you think I seek a wife in order to have a mistress? I want a wife that my whims may be served. I want her to veil, to cover an infinite number of little secret debauches the cloak of marriage wonderfully conceals. In a word, I want her for the reasons you want my daughter. Do you fancy I am ignorant of your object and desires? We libertines wed women to hold slaves. As wives, they are rendered more submissive than mistresses, and you know the value we set upon despotism in the joys we pursue." It was at this point that Dorset entered. His two friends related their conversation, and, delighted by an overture which promptly induced him to avow the sentiments he too had conceived for Adelaide, the president's, Dorset accepted.